Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022, episode 17. I'm Dom Tomlinson, joined as always by Rich Harrison. And for the second time only since we started doing this, a special guest, John Compton. How are we doing, boys?
Really good, you're really good.
Good stuff. Must admit, the vocal cords were definitely exercised on Saturday afternoon. No game for Hull, but the entertainment elsewhere was absolutely sublime.
What was the word that was used to describe Rovers? Was it rank?
Yeah. John Wilkins has always been a bit of a wordsmith. Obviously, he hails from his part of the world, doesn't he? So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
All KR were rank.
Yeah. Very true, though, wasn't it? That's the thing there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You look at them and they're abjectly poor with Rovers. I mean, do you know what really amused me with it all? They got the absolute comeuppance given... They played the big shots after the quarterfinals with all that semi-finals aren't for everybody rubbish. You reap what you sow sometimes, don't you? And the only team for me that could probably get away with that sort of bravado at the minute is St. Helens. I mean, and even they went and got beat this week.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be really careful when you come out with stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It can bite you really quickly, can't it? And it's just that with them at the moment, it's a real lack of direction. They've got no halves. Abdul will never be a scrum half as long as he's got a hole in his backside. He's not an organising half.
Well, for those of you who listen to this who remember when Dan used to have his radio station or his radio show on All Kingston Radio, I used to go on there and wax lyrical at the time about how Jordan Abdul would never ever be a player in a top end Super League team, and I still agree with that. He's a bottom end Super League player.
Yeah, bottom end Super League team.
Yeah. They definitely showed that. And you know what? It was similar to watching Hull in those three defeats, in the derby, and obviously always fielding the cup and Wigan. And obviously the three wins that we've had at home since then, we've absolutely simplified our game, gone back to basics and got three good wins. So in a way, it was kind of like a flashback to watching Hull, and I was sort of tearing my hair out thinking, what are you doing? But at the same time, I was pissing myself because obviously it's Rovers. But it just shows the direction that we're currently going in at Hull FC. It's definitely the right way to go because I think middle ground was the term that me and Richie used a couple of weeks back to describe Hull FC, and I think we're definitely finding that now.
Look, for me, our strength has always been in our pack, and we have one of the best packs in the league, no matter what. People can't dispute that. Any team that we come up against, they all acknowledge how strong our pack is, and we've found a balance within that set of forwards. And I think as much as maligned as Taylor's been over the last couple of years, he's added something and given us a really, really strong middle rotation, which we've got to play to those strengths. On the back of that, our edge back rowers are playing really, really well.
He's come back with a point to prove, hasn't he?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. And he's added impact. What you've got now is you've got a scenario where when you bring your middles on after 20 minutes, when you've got your first round of rotation, your second round of rotation, you're not losing anything. You're actually adding all the time. You're adding impact. And I think we've recognised that's the route through. I mean, I don't want to talk about them too much, but you go back to the semi-final, and that's what Huddersfield did. They actually beat Rovers through the middle. They won the ruck. It's a really simple game, rugby league. You win that ruck, you poke your nose through. You earn the right to go wide and you'll win the game 9 times out of 10. And that's what we've done the last few weeks. We've been patient in how we've played, and we've blasted the front door down before going out the back. And
and that's how Rovers beat us, was they controlled the ruck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's the platform. It's that platform that's been set, I think, by our middles. I think you look at all of our middles, and Jack Brown quite rightly got some recognition being picked up, being selected in that England night squad. But I also thought Brad Fash was very unlucky not to make that night squad. I think he's been incredible this year for me. He's gone on to another level. And it's just that balance, as I said, with your Brown, your Fash, your Taylor, your Satire, your Sow and your Evans. Those are all big boys who are all having good seasons, going well, and providing they stay fit, I think we go really well. And that's the blueprint for how we play till the end of the year for me.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad Fash has been sensational this season. He really has, and it's a point, John, you made to me when we was on our training sessions with Cotton. Sometimes it's not about you know, just a line-busting prop forward, but someone who will hit the contact, get the quick play of the ball, and thinking about the play beyond that. And I think that's something Brad Fash does absolutely superbly, and it sort of counterbalances our props, you know, in the styles that we bring, because we've got, you know, the Krang Bash Wallop with Liggy Sow, Chris Satow, we've got the, you know, the longevity in Kane Evans and Scott Taylor, but with Brad Fash, you just get something a little bit different, and it's the same with Jack Brown. And I think the fact that we've got some different styles in prop forwards there is really helping Hull at the moment, and it's definitely helping us getting a, you know, a role on teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, Brad Fash, it's the unselfish players. That's what he comes up with, as he said. And he's a game plan player. If you give him a game plan, he'll stick to it and he'll continue to do it. He'll follow whatever his coach tells him to do. You can see that. You get some forwards, they'll maybe make 20 metres by running a bit. I'll use a David Fifita as an example. Catches the eye. You can see he catches the eye because he's a big boy, runs wide, breaks some tackles, goes from there, but it'll be an absolute nightmare from a game plan point of view, because he's not getting you to a point on the pitch, he's not setting your platform, he's not giving you anything to play off. It's all off the cuff. Fash is perfect as a foil for your Sows and your Satires and your Taylors. You know, our issues have been when we've had to rely on somebody like Brad to lead us for in a starting position as a front line prop. That's not his game. His game is to complement the rest of them and do the dirty stuff and come in and do it.
And he does it error-free. He very rarely misses a tackle. He very rarely drops a ball. He's an absolute safe pair of hands, and he's really underrated.
Really underrated with his pre-line game as well. It was a really good point, Rich. His hands are real underrated. I mean, we keep saying it, but they are. And he's as a... Night, well, you'll see him so many times just popping up first man in that Australian style of 13. You know, your Cam Murray's and your Zaire Yeo's, and it just, whilst he's maybe not at that level, his hands he's got really good distribution off either hand.
Yeah.
You know, he's really comfortable, and you could see why people looked at him a couple of times in his early years as a potential nine. He's not. He's an absolute modern day 13. We're playing as that third middle, you know, and tidying up. That's what he is. But
just wish he was a couple of inches taller. Well, he'd make a really, 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 really good lock forward. But he's not, is he? He's nuggety.
Yeah. I know what you're saying there, but at the same time, that completely change his game, and it'd probably be a completely different player. You know, because he'd have been brought up differently. He's got that aggression and that nastiness to him, which not all of our players have. You know, we increasingly seem to be getting more aggressive and playing on the front foot with it. But Brad Fash is a big part of that, I think. And yeah, I'm not just talking about the biting allegations. Although I will say, when he scored against Warrington, I was really disappointed that he didn't bite the ball as a celebration. That'd have been perfect. But, you know, that's my only gripe with Brad Fash this year.
Maybe with the hearing. Obviously, the hearing was to come a couple of days later. It might not have been a great look, especially with Paul Cullen lacking about. But
prejudice your case, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Guarantee we'd have got a six-match ban if we did that. But yeah, I think Brad Fash sort of epitomises what LFC are all about at the minute. Just that hard work, that solid-first approach, that go forward, you know, that foundation to work off. And yeah, if we're summing up the season so far, 11 games in, won 7, lost 4, so that fourth in the table. I mean, it's a cliche I've always used now, but with Brad Fash, you can say it. I literally would have bit your hand off for that.
Love that, yeah, absolutely. And we were unlucky not to win a couple more games as well, when you look at it. And a couple of them games that we've actually lost, we probably should have won. You know, certainly you look at the Castleford game, you look at the Wigan game, that was very much a 50-50. And then, there's the derby. Although we were poor, you know, we didn't really...
Yeah, we were poor, but we should have won it.
Oh, yeah.
They were terrible as well. You know, it's just that they were slightly less terrible than us.
What we've done is we've given ourselves a platform, haven't we? You know, ready to go on. And we've had a lot of false dawns. That's the only thing that... Look, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, and I look at it quite often, and I think... Yeah, we're a really good team. I said at the start of the year we'd be top four, and people were laughing at me.
Yeah, me included.
But it could still go. Yeah, it could still go the other way. I mean, we could fall away still. And we've had this in previous years, haven't we? Where we've had points of our season. Even last year, there was points of the season where you're going, yeah, this could really kick on, and then COVID hit. What we need now is a little bit of luck, probably injury wise and suspension wise, and just to tick along. But then I'm gonna pull my own point up here, because the difference that I see in us this season is our depth is a lot stronger. When we've been tested and when we've played without some of our so-called stars, that's not quite often been when we've been at our strongest and putting our best performances. So you've got an awful lot more faith, I think, this year in the second string and the players that come in and cover and do a job, so much so that some of them are absolutely putting pressure on the other players, you know, for that share. It's a real conundrum with players coming back.
And it's a first world problem, isn't it? Because, you know, if at the end of the day, if the guys that we'd thrown in the deep end weren't performing, it'd be really easy to just drop them back to the reserves or whatever and bring your superstars that are sat on the bench back into the thing. But it's a hard ask for Gale or for Reynolds or, you know, for anyone else to go straight back into the side when whoever's been deputising for them has led us to 7 wins out of 11.
Well, you've got to look at this week is really key for me and how Hodgson's got a job on his hands to manage what he does with his team this week, because you've got Connor Wynn and Jamie Shaw who've been excellent over the last 2-3 weeks, and then you've got I mean, I know Griffin's unlikely to be back this week, but saying Swift is on current form, and Vula Kachapani's back, he's available. Would you say that Swift comes back in for Shaw? Because I wouldn't. But then I'm not the one being paid to make those decisions, and who's got the runs on the board? That's the difficult one, isn't it? And where you go?
It's more in the halfbacks as well, because they're both back this week, aren't they?
I'd play Gale, and I'd not play Reynolds if it was me. But I'd go Gale and Lovadua. I think
I'd put Reynolds on the bench. I'll put Reynolds on the bench and bring him on to spell Hodgson.
We did that at Huddersfield in the Cup, though, didn't we? And then Lovadua was just waiting. It was like he was a passenger waiting for Reynolds to come on because he knew he was going to 13.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
All right, it's a tough one.
Well, look, and he might have learned a little bit from that, though. You know, a little bit of guidance on where it goes. I'm not a big fan of changing around my 1, 6 and 7 in the middle of a game. I think you can lose some structure and lose some continuity. I think whoever is the best player to play 1, 6 and 7 should probably be playing there. And even your 9, you know, you can lose some of that, but it's such a difficult position to play 9 from a fitness point of view that you can understand, you know, adding somebody to provide some impact. I just, I look at Josh Reynolds and I love his enthusiasm, and some of his best rugby has been when we've asked him to be the dominant half. Now, with Gale coming back, he wouldn't be the dominant half. When he sits there as that second player and you're asking him to create, that's not his game. He's all about effort, and he's always been an effort player. What I disparagingly call a bits and pieces player, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because you can get, I mean, Lovadua is another one that I'd call bits and pieces player. They don't fit your set structure, but they play on effort and they'll go play after play after play. I just wonder whether that's what we need.
He was always like that. He's always played alongside a dominant half all of his career. Well, he did it at the Bulldogs, and he did it when he briefly was at the Tigers. Always played against alongside a dominant half. So, and you're right. He's the running 5/8. He's not a dominant 7. He's a running 6. So he's all about effort. He's about chasing down lost causes and kicking. When we simplified our game plan against Warrington and we kicked to the corners and said, chase, that's perfect, because he's a terrier. Yeah. That's what he does. I mean, that was absolute music to his ears. He was like, finally, I don't have to make a decision. I just have to kick it to the corner and run after it.
It was the Catalans one, wasn't it? It was dropped for Warrington. Yeah, the Catalans one.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, because he was the dominant half that day, obviously, alongside Lovadua. And he did take a lot of the kicking responsibilities and obviously, like you say,
the
game plan.
Half with a simplified game plan.
I'd argue there, though, that the dominant half was probably Connor from fullback.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point. But he took a lot of onus on the last tackle, did Reynolds, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he did. Look, he was, of the two halfbacks, he was the one that played more like a traditional half. But having Connor in your team allows you to do that, you know, to play like that. We'd be nowhere near where we are without Jake playing. He gives us that balance. And yes, it's not everybody's cup of tea as a fullback. Some people, mindless people for me, people who don't really know what they're on about.
Careful, mate. Careful. Careful.
Sausages. Isn't that what you call them? Sausages.
seem to want a runner and a tackler at fullback.
Yeah.
But playing with our three middles and playing the way we do, we need that ball player out the back.
Arguably, it's because he isn't that. that makes him so unique. Because, you know, the since kind of Billy Slater's and arguably, you know, probably Darren Lockyer, your fullback has become a running threat that backs up any break. You know, that was their kind of the way that they played. Connor doesn't play that way because he hasn't particularly got pace to bend that can do that. What Connor does is he becomes an extra half and an extra pivot, and he injects himself into the line when he needs to and when he wants to, and demands the ball when he has to, and gives us an extra dimension in attack. The problem we've got there is that when someone does make a break, who's backing them up? And it's usually Reynolds. We play with Reynolds backing them up, or the six, or whether it's Lovadua or whoever, backing up a break. So I think people have been kind of blinded by the fact that most fullbacks in World Rugby League these days play that Billy Slater kind of way, which is backing up a break, and Connor doesn't. So therefore, if they don't look into the game deeply, they think Connor's not as good because he's not that kind of player. Well, he brings something completely different. And well, I can't think of another fullback in World Rugby League that's got the number of assists that he's got this year.
Tops of try assist, doesn't he, in Soul Boy?
Yeah, exactly. And also has been the most influential player in his team, like so he has.
The interesting stat for me that came out now, Old Daily Mail, sometimes some of the drivel that they roll out, I just sort of laugh at. But they did a stats piece, I think it was last week, and there was a really interesting one in that Jake Connors actually carried the ball more than anybody else in our team. He's got the most carries, and people give him stick for not carrying the ball.
Yeah, he don't carry the ball, apparently,
more than
it?
Anybody.
Yeah.
It's a fallacy that he doesn't want to run the ball. What he doesn't want to do is waste all his energy in poor areas of the pitch, so then he's not... Because, I mean, he's not the most athletic player in the world, is he? He's quite a big kid for a fullback. You know, he's, as you touched on, Rich, he's not blessed with Jai-field-like
pace. He's not got natural pace, no.
Yeah. But he's an unbelievable rugby player, just a natural-born rugby player who could play anywhere probably on the pitch and still excel and be really good. And what we need to do is just be grateful that we've got him, you know, whilst we've got him. Because without him, we'd be... Would be in 6th or 7th.
We've alluded to this over the since he's had the fullback jersey, what, 18 months now. We've actually said, how many games has he won, Hull? And where would we be without him? I mean, you touch on the fact that this time last year, we was having the same conversations, was content with where Hull were. We started the year really well last year. Then obviously COVID happened and we fell away. But how many of those games in that first half of last season, and again this season, would we have not won without, you know, if Jake Connor wasn't in that side? I think you can count at least 6 without even thinking. Yeah, it gets cold all the time.
I think there's that groundswell of you know, well, you know, Jamie Shaw, you know, a lot of people. It's, you know, he's a whole born lad. He's, you know, a lot of my personal friends with some of the squad, and oh, you know, it's a real shame, you know, blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, he's doing a job for us on the wing, and a far superior fullback has emerged. And I'm sorry, that's just the bricks. That's the way it is.
It is. It's nice to have these conversations, isn't it? And obviously, this started going into what is a really tough ask on Friday night against St. Helens. We're actually going into a game where we're thinking, right, who's going to play? You know, who's going to play on the wing? Who's going to play at standoff? Who's going to play at scrum half? You know, who's going to be obviously the interchange nine option on the bench? If you like, you know, who's going to? There's. I won't say doubts. Cause it's not doubts. It's not the right word. But there's options. That's the word I'm looking for. There's options for all these positions at the moment, which we haven't really had. You know, if you think of all the disruption that Hull FC have had this year, and it's a point, actually. We got tweeted last week, didn't we, by a listener called Justin, saying, actually, some of these players were saying that we're missing every week, that we call our, you know, our best and most influential players. Are they actually that anymore? And obviously, he's referring to your Reynoldses and your Gales's. And
yeah.
It's sort of like a compliment on the rest of the squad that we are in the position we are in now, because depth is something we mentioned. Have we actually got the depth? And I think it's shown, actually, yeah, we have. We've got some very good young players. We've got some very good fringe players. And obviously, I mean that respectfully.
You're right. And I mean, I think it's a difficult thing to actually quantify, because, you know, you never know what would have happened if we'd have had Gale and Reynolds fit for the entire season. Would we still be in fourth? Who knows? You know, you can't suppose that, you can't surmise that. But whatever's happened, the players that have taken the place have guided us to fourth in the league so far, when we've gone a full round where we've played everyone either home or away. So, you know, who knows? And I agree with, you know, you said that guy one of our fans, so to speak, said to us, you know, you're always talking about players that are sat on the bench and players that aren't playing and, you know, and all the rest of it. And I agree, we have done that because there's a substantial portion of our salary cap sat not playing. And the fact that we're in fourth without that portion of the salary cap says one of two or three things, doesn't it? Fantastic, we've got really good strength in depth. And also, bloody hell, do we really need all this? Do we really need to spend all this money on players that we don't obviously don't need if we're running fourth?
It's an interesting question, though, because I'm look, my take on that is this, is against your middle and bottom, and the gulf from, I'll temper this by saying the gulf from the top to the bottom of Super League is significant.
Huge.
Yeah, I think against your middle and your bottom end Super League teams, I think we can carry it. I think if we've got any aspirations to do something at the back end of the season in big games, I don't think we can get away with playing a Lovador and a McNamara at halfback. That's not a grand final
against
winning halfback.
Against
Saints
or Wigan,
we can't just rely on Jake. We're going to have the halfbacks would have to show up as well, you know, and play there. And I think that's where you're looking at your Gale and your Reynolds, and there has to be. Look, I've toyed with this. I love the idea of you picking players on form and you're saying to Lovadua, look, you've done really well at six. You're our six now. That's where you're going to play. And even I was saying at the start of this podcast that I'd pick Lovadua at six this week. But there has to be an argument that you just go, who's my best six and seven? Well, it's Gale and Reynolds. How are they going to get themselves into form by playing? You know, and you just back them and you play them and you say, this is my worry, and this is always my worry with them, is their appearance record, and I won't say injury record for Luke Gale because he's not being injured, he's been suspended, but their appearance record has been poor in the time at LFC. Reynolds has not strung a long run of games together, and he's not done that in his career for a long period of time.
Not since he left the Bulldogs. He hardly missed a game for the Bulldogs, and then as soon as he signed for the Tigers injury thing struck, like it does with every player we sign. And you know, he ended up sat on the bench for a massive portion of it. You know, so he's been very unlucky.
It's a Brett Hodgson decision. And I can see merits in both arguments. You know, we're saying, yeah, look, I'm going to pick Lovadua. He's going to play in the arse. I do think Luke Gale has to play. I think he has to play at seven for us to be a top-end Super League team. I think ultimately we'll get found out without a seven with us. But that as well, I think he's just got to tweak how he's been playing slightly. Because I think he's overplayed his hand when he's played. Yeah. He's been guilty of going wide too early. And him and Connor getting carried away together. I think if Luke Gale can simplify it and play as nice and steady and people don't get on his case looking for miracle players every week, then I think we absolutely have the right players to go out and do it. I think there's some real balance there.
Agreed. And I think the other thing as well that we've got to look at is that both of those guys that we're talking are in the final year of their agreements. You know, obviously Gale's only on a 1 year and Reynolds signed two with an option for a third, but it's a club option. So, you know, there's every chance that we might be looking for a six and a seven at the end of the year. So there's a real need for both of those players to step up and actually prove that they're worth another contract. Because I don't think Gale's ready for retirement. I don't think he's come for a year. I think he's come saying, I'll sign a year and I'll prove myself and you'll re-sign me. And I honestly think that Reynolds wants to go around again. So both of them have got a point to prove. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, with Gale, I can't remember where I read this, but I read somewhere that there's a clause that there is a second year dependent on number of games played. I think he's got to hit a certain number of games, and I don't know how many that is.
With his suspensions, he's going to three quarters of his time suspended.
What would he go over? Betting man, you'd say around 15, maybe 27 round Super League season, you know, a couple of cup games, a couple of playoffs. You'd want him at least playing half of that, wouldn't you? That would be around the 15 mark.
Well, he's going to have to be ever present then, if that's the case.
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, what's he played? Six or seven so far?
I do think we've got to be pretty ruthless with some of our retention though, and some of it. I think we've got a history of keeping players a year too long. And for the money that we will be paying out for an overseas halfback, I don't think, even if Reynolds goes and has a tremendous year till the end of this year, I think you've got to be sensible and go, we're going to go in a different direction next year. And that's not being that's not being dismissive of what he can do for us. That's like saying we should be really open and honest and transparent and say, thanks, this is where we see it at. We want you to go out on a high and play with us, but we need to go in a different direction. And I think we could make better use of that quota spot. And I think we possibly need to have a different, or I would anyway, I would have a different approach to my overseas signings. I'd be looking for a more hungry, slightly less unproven halfback. You look at Mason Lina, and he went into Wakefield. Brodie Croft for me would be absolute. I saw Paul Cook said about Brodie Croft, and those who know me, and Dan will vouch for this, I've been going on about Brodie Croft since he signed, because he actually, for me, looks like a young version of Albert Kelly, but a fit one.
Yeah.
You know, he's carrying the ball far more than he ever did in the NRL and looks really dangerous. But that would be the direction I would go. A half-wit with a point to prove. Allard Jackson Hastings now back at the Tigers, you know, ripping it up there after really...
Absolutely, he is.
After reinventing himself, you know, that's the direction I would go. Instead of taking an already proven half who's at the back end of his career, you know, your Mitchell Pearce, your Josh Reynolds, your James Maloney's, that for me is not a direction we need to go in. I think with our overseas signings, and we've always had really good value out of Kiwis, haven't we? And our Pacific Islanders, and you've only got to look at our players there. You know, to see
you
that.
Look at Brodie Croft. Brodie Croft was the Melbourne halfback in 2019 when they won the minor premiership and played in every game.
It was really unfortunate to land at a Brisbane team that was in massive decline, I think, and then carried the can as the half. He was asked to do that. Well, he's gone to Salford and played a little bit second fiddle to Snead, and it's really, really suited him, you know, to interject himself where he's needed. And 100%, that would be where my eggs would go as a six. And he's a right-sided half.
Well, it looks very much like Jake Truman to fit a complete, doesn't it?
And that's a left-sided half, isn't it, Jake?
Yeah.
Jake
Truman comes in for me, prays on the left side. I'd go out and I'd do everything I possibly could to bring Brodie Croft in. I mean, the club may well have completely different ideas, have somebody else lined up and be going down a different route. But I'd be going Truman on the left, I'd be going Croft on the right. That would be my ideal scenario. But we've got the salary cap, haven't we? So who knows how that
fits in. Very young halves, if that's the case. You know, Brodie Croft's only 24, 25. Truman's, what, 23, 22? That would be a very young halfback pairing that would potentially take us for the next 10 years if we get them together.
With Jake out the back, you know, before he runs off to an NRL team, probably in a year or so. But you know,
I don't think that will happen. Personally.
Well, you say that, but look at it, the salary cap is going up there again, isn't it? You're going to what, 9-point-something million Aussie dollars? The average salary is going to be, if you took it across the top 30, the average salary is going to be equivalent to £270,000 a year.
There was a piece on this last week in the UK media, wasn't it, saying like an average Aussie player could come here and be a marquee player, but it wouldn't actually. It'd be, you know, you're talking someone like a Kevin Proctor could come over here, get 200 grand. It'd be on any, exactly, a complete journeyman average NRL player, yet it'd be on any more than, you know, your federation or your club produced players over in the UK. The difference is sort of, it's getting a worry now, because how can you attract those players over here, but how can you get the right player over here to obviously justify that salary? I sort of look at now with Josh Reynolds, he's obviously on big money, but has he been Hull FC's best player over the past 18 months? No, he hasn't.
No.
So it's a tough one, isn't it? I think that market's getting, obviously that gap's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It means it's tough for overseas recruitment. And I sort of like the fact that we've highlighted obviously Jake Truman, obviously it's been 5-6 months now, hasn't it, that it's been pretty much done and dusted, that he's coming to Hull FC next season. And you know, if we did sign someone over here in Brodie Croft, who's already obviously played a season in the UK, he's obviously realistic in the wage demands and all that. I think it's you know, I see where I'm coming from. It's a bit more realistic, but also a bit more cap management than going to and getting someone completely new and bringing him over here and you know, and ended up with another
Reynolds. Your point, John, about him being a bit like a young Albert Kelly, that actually bears a little bit of further investigation as well, because you know that's exactly what we did with Kelly. We took him from a bottom four super team and turned him into an half decent 5-8, didn't we? That's
absolutely
exactly what we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he said bottom four super league team. When it won, that got relegated, then dotted.
Yeah, Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Well, yeah, but for COVID, this one would have been relegated as well, wouldn't it?
It's, yeah.
Easily forgotten that.
It is.
Yeah,
it is,
and you know, the year that they stayed up, the year that Rovers stayed up by, 4 points, they beat us twice. If we'd have beaten them twice that year, they'd have gone down.
So, yeah, there's another difference. Yeah, they got stayed up on points difference, didn't they?
Yeah. And just, you mentioned Kevin Proctor there. You remember last week I said that he was awful and he'd done, what was it, like one run for 4 metres in the entire match?
Mm.
When they got beaten by the Roosters this week, Kevin Proctor, 3 runs for 26 metres all match.
There we go then.
Played 63 minutes.
Guarantee he'll end up on, he'll end up at Wyre next year on 280 grand a year, you'll watch.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. With Matt Duffy.
Yeah, see, that's another thing. They never learn, do they? And it's sort of like we were just talking about recruitment now, and obviously that's the hot topic right now, recruitment. What Hull FC are going to do, who they're going to retain, who they're going to acquire. Matt Duffy, and very, very average NRL players going to come link with Warrington. Obviously, that ain't going to be cheap. They just never learn, do they? And then you sort of look at the direction that Hull are going in right now. And obviously, it's very centred on the young players, and it's the young players who arguably are worthy of the biggest plaudits this year. You know, like your Connor Wins, your Jack Browns, your Brad Flashes, your Jordan Lanes. That's the direction to go. We say it all the time. That's what Leeds did, as much as it pains me to say it. That's what St Helens have done for 20 years. That's what Wigan have done for 20 years. There's your direction. Storm do it in Australia. Penrith are doing it now.
You know, we're talking about players coming over to the Super League as well. Let's just look at that, right? Duffy, the reason he's going to Super League is because there's not an NRL team that want to touch him with a barge pole.
Because he's average. That's why. Exactly.
Jai Field. Great in a, you know, played really well in a very good Wigan side. Not a single NRL club wants a bar of him. Barber was the same. Sandow was the same. You know, arguably Reynolds, you know. Not a single NRL club wanted a bar of him. Kelly, when Kelly came across to Rovers, was exactly the same. They're not coming over to do a year, you know, and hopefully regain a position back in the NRL. And the exception to that is Jackson Hastings. And that was because of the circumstances of him being released by Manly, because he had a massive fallout with Trent Barrett, which it's an easy thing to do because Trent Barrett could fall out with his own bloody reflection because he's such an horrible person. And he walked from Manly and was desperately looking for a club, and he rocked up at Salford, which was a hell of a gamble for him. You know, a year at Salford, then a couple of years at Wigan, and he's gone back to an NRL club. That's not going to happen to someone like Duffy or Jai Field. You know, so there's a real... The Australian view of the Super League is it's somewhere you go when you're not good enough, or somewhere you go when you're on the wind down and you're ready for retirement.
I mean, you look at the commercial side of it again, and the money in Super League now is akin to the Queensland Cup. You know, they'll earn a very, very similar wage playing in the Queensland Cup to what they will in the Super League. It's
you're a marquee player in Super League is the equivalent of being a reserve grade player in NRL.
But then that's where work permits come into the fore, isn't it? And you've got a bit like the only reason Hull could get Joel over Joel was because he played an international game for Fiji.
Yeah.
You can't just go get an average, I don't know, Queensland or New South Wales Cup player.
Well, talking of that then, because I was tasked with finding out of contract hookers, wasn't I?
Oh yeah, your homework.
The homework.
Can't believe that. Not the cream listeners, not the cream podcast listeners, giving you homework.
There are 5 out of contract hookers in the NRL next year. Jaden Beryl at Cronulla never played first team, so he's not going to come over because he's not going to get a wag permit, right? Jaden Nikarima. Who's been at the Storm?
He's some bother Nikarima as well. Would he struggle for a work permit?
Yeah, so that's that. Mm-hmm. So he's got problems. Freddie Lussick, so Darcy Lussick's younger brother.
Just gone to New Zealand, him, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's at the Warriors at the moment, but he's only on a 1-year deal.
Right. So really lightweight as well, Freddie Lussick.
Very really lightweight. And there's Temple Kalepo at the Warriors as well, who's never had a first grade game. The only name that's got a few under his belt and he's getting on, he's 32, is Mitch Rain. He's the only one.
Wow.
The only one.
Yeah.
And he's going, and the Parramatta supporters are gutted he's going because they've signed...
Josh Hodgson.
What's it instead?
Josh Hodgson.
Josh Hodgson, yeah. Has gone to, you know, they're saying, why are we getting rid of Mitch Rain, who's playing out of his skin for us and he's 32? We've signed Josh Hodgson, who's 33, and we're 2 dodgy knees. So Paris supporters are absolutely gutted with that. And Mitch Rein should pick up another NRL team, but if he doesn't, he'll do a job for someone for a couple of years. Well, Mitch Rein.
So what do we do here then? Well, let's say need a new direction in the hooker. A lot of fans are obviously calling it out now. Where do we go then? If we can't get someone from overseas, you've got 18-year-old Denis Belfort waiting in the wings. You've got obviously Joel Overdue, who was signed as a nine. What do you do with Danny Elton? Yeah.
Well, look, you know, we had this conversation last week, Dan, and it's not my view isn't particularly popular.
Not with me, anyway.
I think having had a look at Barnforth, I think there's a real player there. I was impressed technically with him more than anything. His ability, his wide pass off both hands was first class. He had some pace and. Impressively, defensively, he was physically solid. You know, he wasn't your typical 18-year-old kid who was going to come in and get run over. I would be drip-feeding him in with Houghton with another year on reduced terms. That being said, there's an alternative way to go, and Brad Dwyer is available and out of contract, and there is a player that's caused us all sorts of problems. Your issue you have is Brad Dwyer is probably... His greatest strength is probably coming off the bench and changing games, not controlling a game for 60 minutes and allowing your young 18-year-old to come in, you know, and have a spell there.
Cam Lovejoy would do that. He hasn't been given a go yet. He had a stint at 9, didn't he, against St Helens, but we were well beaten. Again, at Castleford, we scored, I think, two or three tries in that period.
I thought he took some really poor options when he went to 9. And I know that sort of countered by the fact that we did score points, you know, we became more...
We were chasing the game, weren't we, obviously, as well.
Yeah, I just thought he went down some short... And that's what you'll get with him. I think Lovadua is your nine who's going to be erratic, who's going to create things, who's going to do something a bit different and time to come off.
Yeah, he's the guy that's going to scoot, yeah.
Yeah, but at times it's not going to come off. If you're looking for... You want a scenario... Ideally, you want Danny Outen to lift his game and play 60 minutes or 50 minutes, you know, for another year, and that solves a problem for us. But is he too far gone? Have we battered his body too much? You know, that's the question there.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, whilst he's still topping these bloody tackle charts, which I think should be bloody outlawed. There are still some people in our supporter group that go, and some people say Danny Outen's finished. Look at this, he's not played every game this year and he's still topping the tackle count. That's not a positive.
Because he's a target in that middle.
It's not a positive.
It also means we've been turning the ball over too much. Why are we making those tackles?
It means we're doing too much defence and he's doing too much bloody work. He can't do anything with a ball in his hand when he's gassed from doing 150 bloody tackles every fortnight.
He has been a lot better in the early part of games, I think, Danny Outen. I get it was only to lose as well. I'm going to temper it with that. It was only to lose. But I saw enough in that little glimpse, that cameo from Barnton, to suggest that there's an actual player there. There's conversations and talk internally within the club. They're going to bring him down to Bishop Burton to go live there, I think, and take him out of Leeds. And bring him into the club, and they see a real lot in him. And look, he's the future. I think they've earmarked him as the future. It's just how you manage that stage, because that 18 is not ready to play every week. He really isn't, and he won't be next year. No. Probably not the year after either.
Jack Brown's your prime example. He's ever present this year. What is he now? 21, going on 22. Obviously, came through as an 18-19-year-old making his debut 3 years ago, didn't he?
Yeah,
but Fash was the same. Played 7 games and he didn't play for a year. You've definitely got to manage it and be smart.
What I do, and this is what lends me towards giving out in a year, and bringing Bamforth through, is we're very likely to change both our halfbacks, aren't we? Very likely to change both our halfbacks, and we do need a level of continuity there.
Which would be keeping Houghton for another year. Yeah.
Yeah, and whether or not, well, it's a salary cap sport. We've got to manage that salary cap. You know, you can't have superstars in every position, and you've got to look at it. It is a primary position, but providing we're on the front foot, providing the halves are taking charge of it, and we're getting Barnforth ready, I think it is a solution. It's not a perfect solution, but I think it's one that could potentially reap rewards for us long term.
Yeah, I take your point.
I get the point, and I still get the logic. But look, at my biggest gripe of all has been the lack of attacking threat from Nan. And it's not just a six-month thing. It's been something that's been grating me for about 3.5 years now, if I'm being brutally honest. And I look at the way James Roby plays the game. I look at the, you know, the threat that you see. And look, because obviously I'm both in the NRL, both in Super League, even the Championship, you know. And all I see don't have that. It's as simple as that. And
You're not going to get a change in him now. And so then, do you go down a different route? And do you take a Brad Dwyer or somebody like that who is coming off contract and is English, but he's probably going to demand a decent wedge? But that being said, Danny Outon does as well as a player with tenure. You know, in the club, he's probably one of our top earners currently. You know, the former Man of Steel is coming to the back end of what was likely a really big contract at that time. So whatever happens, I think you've got to. If he does get a contract, it will be reduced terms. You know, he's not going to command the same salary as what he did 4 years ago. But these are the decisions for the coaches to make. You know, to look at who will fit in and play our structure and play our pattern of play. We touched on this with Connor earlier. Is that we don't play the same way as everybody else. We don't. Exactly. We play unorthodox, and so. And part of that is through necessity because we don't have that threat from Nine and we go from there. I think it's a reflection on how poor our recruitment was over the last, in this area, over the last sort of 5 years. There's been no real long-term planning in terms of, until we've brought Bamforth in, as to what we're going to do. You know, and there's been no sort of acknowledgement that there's been an issue there. And there has been an issue there. And Danny has been an incredible servant to the club, an incredible servant, and will go down in history as one of the greatest players ever to play for LFC, just due to the number of games he's played and the things that he's done. But there should have been an internal reflection on we need to do something about this, and we need to, even if it's just providing with some support and spelling a bit more.
Yeah. I said this in 2019. We took our eye off the prize, and our recruitment for that year was absolutely shocking. And I got absolutely lynched on social media for putting that. Now everyone agrees with me, so it's funny how it works out. What we did, we took our eye off the prize. We didn't plan for losing Gareth Ellis. We didn't plan for a long-term succession to both the seven position with Mark Snead. We've seen that now because we've got a stopgap there. And obviously with the nine position with Danny Outon now. What it's took Brett Hodgson to come in and actually identify that and realise that. And it's another reason, as both of you know, I'm a massive fan of Brett Hodgson, what he's trying to do at this club. But it took someone of his calibre, of his knowledge, to come in and actually realise that that's what needs to be done. He's got a long-term plan now in his makeup for his squad, which are all going to be Hull Academy-produced players. It doesn't matter if they're born in Leeds, the other side of the Pennines, Cumbria, Hull, whatever. It don't matter. If they come through the academy, they're going to be embedded into our systems. They're going to be a mainstay of the squad. He's identified where we obviously need to improve. He's identified the type of player that he wants to come into the club. And obviously, he's focused on the long-term picture as well rather than the short-term. And it absolutely infuriates me when you think where we were back then. You know, obviously, knocking on the door of the grand final, obviously, two Challenge Cup wins under our belt, to where we are now, sort of trying to build ourselves to set a foundation to get back up to that level again. It's been LFC's problem for as long as I can remember. And all the time I've been supporting the club, you know, 20-plus years now, it's always been the case. And yeah, that's why we've got to get it right this year. And I think Paul Cook, we've alluded to that piece a week back that he did about Brody Croft and a couple of other things that he mentioned in there, and he's bang on. We don't need wholesale changes. We just need a couple of tweaks. And if we get two or three tweaks, that's all we need. I think we're there or thereabouts in the makeup of our squad. Just need two or three, maybe even as many as four additions. And I think we can be a genuine force in the game again. It's just getting those decisions right. That's what's so important. That's why we spent 45 minutes talking about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you say we made those mistakes 2019 and everything, a lot of it was based on you know, we'll give that guy one more year. You know, or we'll you know, we don't really, you know, we can afford to let him leave. And it wasn't thought out at all. We put
the Minicello and Sica Manu decisions were ridiculous, weren't they, for at least 2 or 3 years.
So, for a one name that you got now, then. What about Manu Mal? Absolutely. What do we do with him?
It's a really interesting one, Dan, and it bears. I tell you what has an influence over this is what you do with Josh Griffin as well, because you've got Connor Wynn now absolutely banging the door down as a left centre to go there, and you're offering some real pace and a real threat. You know, on that edge, is he the finished article? Absolutely not, but he's again, he's somebody who's a bit different You know, he is a threat, and I think we should be looking to play him. Josh Griffin, following his Achilles injury, the one look great going forward. You know, he does the graft, does the work, works hard, but he's playing like a second rower in the centre. He's absolutely playing like a second rower. So he's reached the point now where he probably needs to play in the back row.
Yeah, Richard said that.
He really does. I mean, he's a big bloke. And then you've got Manu Mao, just about our best player at the moment, playing on that edge, but the wrong side of 30. You know, and you're going... They always say it's better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. That's the one decision I wouldn't want to be making, because right now I'd be saying you've got to give Manu Mao a deal. You've got to play him. But equally, when you're thinking about the salary cap, you're going, well, Josh Griffin could go in that slot in there and do that job. He could play as that left-sided back rower. You've got to bear in mind as well, Savelio will be back fit next year. So then you've got Lane, Savelio and Griffin, all potentially as second row options. Do you really want to be spending marquee money on another overseas back rower? He's not going to hang around and stay for less money. That's one scenario where you can't say, "Oh well, we're going to give you a reduced deal." You know, he'll just go, "All right, I'll go back home. I'll finish." It's a difficult one. On form, absolutely, you give him a deal. When you're looking at it pragmatically, there's other decisions to bear in mind, and it's how the club sees the Griffin win scenario for me answers that question.
Yeah, agreed. And Griffin coming back off a major injury and not looking the same player since. That kind of answers it for me. Is that I would on current form, I'd give Manu Mao another year. Not least because I wouldn't want to be the one to tell him that we weren't offering him. I think on current form, I think he's worth it. But I totally take your point that we're in danger of falling into the trap that we've just lambasted, which is, you know, giving someone an extra year. And I think, you know, to your point about Connor Wynn knocking on the door, absolutely. And I'd add, although he's playing on the other side of the field, I'd add Cam Scott to that as well, who I think Wynn and Scott should be our centre partnership for years to come. I really do.
I couldn't agree more with that.
And I just think, you know, with Griffin coming towards the end, with Carlos in probably his last contract as well, we're setting up very, very nicely for the future, which is great to see. But
how old is Carlos? I think he's got...
You're older than me, 31, but he got a four-year deal in 2020, so he's still got another couple of seasons left, even after this one.
Yeah, I'd say that probably is the end of Carlos.
Yeah, it'll be 33, won't he, going on 34. So, that's got to be seen as his last one.
It's probably his last contract.
Because you'd like to think Cam Scott then, you know, imagine Cam Scott. If Cam Scott comes back from this ankle injury and plays like he did against Salford, you know, and hits the ground running again, imagine that in 2 years' time. You're sort of seeing the development of Connor Wynn now to what he was, you know, as that hot-headed kid that couldn't, you know, call him a wanker and he ended up swinging at you three times. Remember that Featherstone Rovers in a reserves game?
Christ, yeah.
There was a bit of verbals and next minute he's landing seven blows on his opposition, gets banned for 6 weeks. You know, he's not that kid anymore. I think there's still a fuse there, don't get me wrong. There's a little bit of coming together against Metalsia when we played Warrington on Easter Monday. But I think there's a much more level, matured kid there now who's, you know, focused on his rugby and obviously progressing at a rate which really sucks with FC right now. I mean, I said it at the end of last year, he finished the season as one of our best players. And then you look at when he comes into the side this year, again, he never lets us down and he's always in the top bracket.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, he's got pace.
That's just what I was going to say, Rich. Yeah. And that is an area of our team that we do need to increase. Is the speed side of it? I think that he absolutely offers a speed threat. You know, in a team that isn't blessed with pace, we look pretty pedestrian. If Griff comes back in on that left edge, and I mean Swift has lost a yard. He's not as quick as he used to be. That's not the dynamic left-sided edge that it once was there. Right?
Yeah.
I think you've genuinely got... There's some real competition for places, which is brilliant. That's what we've been crying out for years. If somebody doesn't perform, there is somebody there to take the spot and go in. It's not just somebody coming back and playing just because they're fit. That's what we've had for the last three, 4 years. If you're fit,
we've got the opposite problem to some of the players we were talking about earlier, which is like, you know, your Fields, your Dufties, your, you know, like James Roberts has been all of his career. And Dan will know this intimately because I talk about this all the time, is that I call James Roberts a park footballer with speed.
big fan.
That's what he is. He's got no skill. He's just quick, right? And now he's lost that yard of pace. He's nothing, and he's absolutely floundering. And we've got the opposite issue is that we've got really good footballers with no pace. So, you know, that's the issue. You know, you've got a Griffin, and you've got a Carlos isn't that quick. You know, so you've got these really skillful, crafty footballers that really do lack a yard of pace. And, you know, when you've got a Cam Scott that's quick, and you've got a Connor Wynn that's quick, and McIntosh is quick, and Swift is quicker than we've had, even though I agree with you, he's lost the yard. It's a completely different ball game for us now, because we've got good players that are quick.
It's something Hodgson's identified, though, isn't it? It's something he's wanted to bring into the club and has brought to the club ever since he took the hot seat. I mean, he realised it was Swift, you know, he's given the number 21 shirt, but he's still his first choice winger. So he's definitely realised that pace is the way to go. I think we've seen that even in the forwards. He likes his Jack Browns, he likes his Brad Fashies, he likes his Jordan Lins, his quick mobile middles. And I think we've seen that in the backs, obviously signing people like Daniel McIntosh, absolutely the way to go. He's a finisher, he's quick, you know, he's elusive. I think
similar to the West Tigers team that won the comp in 2005 he was a part of.
But we're not going away from size either, which is what's pleasing, because you can get real guilty, especially in the modern day game. You think how quick it is now, you can think, oh, there's no place for the big fella. There absolutely is a place for the big fella. Try telling St. Helens that with Alex Walmsley and Ignatius Parsi, who won the grand final for him last year. You know, there's still a place for that, and I think we've got that balance now. You know, we're managing satire really well. I think Liggy Sal is one of our best players every single week. As you know, you both said, Scott Taylor's come in and shut me up. You know, if he sticks to those levels week in, week out for the rest of the season, then I'm happy for him to go around again, even though it's next year he's out of contract. But you know, we seem to have got those middles right, and we're using them right, and we're rolling them right, which is so important. And if you can complement that with a bit of speed, I think, as I say, we're not that far away. You look at LFC where we are right now, we're fourth in the table, outright fourth as well, and it's a big part of the season coming up now. If we can, I know it's obviously only one of our next five games are at home, but if we can sneak a couple of wins in there, we're going to be right in the thick of the action, and you know, it shows that we're definitely going in the right direction. I think there's a clear plan here that Orton's trying to implement at the club, and I think it's a key word both of you have mentioned already, but we've got to back him. We've got to back these decisions that the club makes, both in terms of recruitment, but also in terms of selections, you know, week by week as well. How many times have we said this year, you see LFC, you know, on Twitter and Facebook post the lineup and everyone's having a meltdown. Leeds was a good example. You know, a couple of months back, Edenley, that lineup gets announced and there was an utter, absolute meltdown on Facebook. You know, people reading the riot act and going absolutely crazy. Look what happened, we turned them over. What was it, 31-8? And everyone's, you know, wanking Hodgson off, and 80 minutes later, it's a funny old game, isn't it? I think
backs himself, doesn't he? He doesn't listen to popular opinion. Mm. He does what he thinks is right, rather than what he thinks is going to be popular. And I think that's the sign of a coach with a strong mentality who believes in what he's doing, prepared to live or die by his own decisions. And successful clubs aren't immediately successful when your coach comes in most of the time. Certainly. Mm. I'll use Huddersfield last year with Watson. Watson came in, and it takes a couple of not transfer windows. A couple of it's not just changing the players. It's implementing your style of play. You know, there was a lot made of the fact that we don't play any different. You know, to what we did under Radford. Well, what you don't do is you don't rip up the playbook completely and start from scratch. You need to steadily transition those players and put your foundation.
You can alienate them if you don't
and drip feed your information in.
Because you just confuse the crap out of them. Yeah,
in a squad of, even though the top end players, in a squad of 25 players there, you'll maybe have three or four who could take it all in, you know, and do it. There'll be, and I'll go back, this is a Radford saying this, he always said he had some players who were a 1 in 20 player. You've got to tell them it 20 times for it to sink in, and then you've got other players that are a 1 in 1 player. You tell them it once and they'll take it every time and go from there. And it's the same at every level. It's about emotional intelligence. And so Hodgson is steadily building his team and steadily drip feeding his ideas and his way of playing into it, and you can see the transition. What I love, right, and people won't like this, what I love is the pragmatic nature of how he's playing. You know, and how we are playing. And yes, we're playing within ourselves sometimes, but that always gives us an opportunity. You know, I would happily go watch LFC win 1-0 every week. As long as we won. I couldn't care less about the entertainment value. I go to watch us win. I know that to a certain extreme, you know, and a lot of the floating fans are very different, but I just want us to win. That's it. Full stop.
Then I get a massive satisfaction out of watching Manu Mal bust the line, Josh Reynolds kick to the corner, and then six or seven players chase it and stick the opposition on the backside 5 metres from touch, you know, 5 metres from their own line. I get huge satisfaction in that because that's what rugby league is.
Well, that's the rugby that wins you trophies. Exactly. That's the rugby. The flashy rugby, throwing it about, that's all right on a flat track against a team that's struggling. You're not gonna win a cup final playing like that.
Or a semi-final.
There
you go. There is the absolute case in point. We're the entertainers. What have you won? Nothing.
How'd you get on Saturday? Oh, I had a massive chuckle. I was at Ian Thresh's house. Every LFC fan knows Ian Thresh. I was absolutely buzzing on Saturday afternoon watching that.
The only problem I had with Rovers losing was that at one point it was 25-0, and given it was a semi-final, that's half a final. Given that they lost the last one 50-0, that was nice. I thought that was karma. But when they scored, I was like, oh bugger!
Want a try?
Never
either.
A try.
Yeah, never a try.
No. Trying to give them like, never a try. Not having gone up, no try.
It proves our points, though, doesn't it, all this? All that we've been saying about OFC and the type of rugby that we want to see, and obviously the fact that we're so content with the last three victories, it all goes hand in hand. Yeah, it's funny, and it's obviously at their expense taking the piss out of them, the fact that they've won bugger all in 37 years, but it's all justification to the points we make about Hull FC and how we want to see Hull play and how, you know, what Hodgson's trying to implement into this club and how we move forward. We can see it, and we can see what he's trying to do. Again, there's definitely a plan there. There's definitely a direction, and I'm prepared to back him. I say we praise him every week, to me and Rich, on this podcast. We massive Brett Hodgson fans. Still a little bit of naivety that you're going to get in, you know, obviously with a bloke of his first head coaching gig. But I think overall, I really don't see the flaws in him. I think he's definitely the man to take us forward, and I think we're starting to see that now. You look at the way we're playing. Look at, you know, we're trying to retain, as I say, and we're trying to bring in as well. And it's also the type of player too. I can't really sing his plaudits enough at the minute. I have to stop that the results, you know, keep going to obviously justify that.
There's a phrase that I used earlier again about when you're trying to put information into players, and it's an emotional intelligence, and you can see that he's got that in spades. He doesn't get too carried away when we've won. He doesn't get too low when we've lost. It's very even keel, level, keeps the players at that level, and that's what you need. The fans are very quick to, and it's the modern era we live in. You know, this social media era is everybody wants instant success,
instant
and they want instant gratification. Yeah,
100%. Yeah,
and it doesn't work. Real success isn't built on that. Real success is built on strong, solid foundations, and that's what he's trying to build. You can see it.
Look at your coaches at the moment that are right at the top of the NRL. Right, you've got Bellamy at Melbourne, who's under, you know, who's had his absolute ups and downs. You know, there was times when he was looking like it was the end at Melbourne, and he's persevered and he's stuck to it, and he's got the systems and processes. You got Cleary at Panthers, who was sacked by the Panthers, ended up going to the Tigers and going elsewhere for a couple of years and then came back. So he's had these ups and downs. You've got Bennett, who's not got a gig at the moment because he's building the Dolphins for next year, who absolutely has had his ups and downs. You know, took a really unfashionable Souths team and a really unfashionable Dragons team and improved them, but then went to Newcastle with all the money in the world and couldn't do anything. You know, went back to Brisbane when he probably shouldn't have. He's had his ups and downs. You know, there are very, very few coaches in any sport that come in, have instant success and stay at that level.
To emphasise your point, just look at Brad Arthur at Parramatta. Absolutely epitomises it. Just over the last couple of weeks, and reinforces our point. It was only 2 weeks ago that he was getting slagged off left, right and centre, being accused of nepotism for playing his lad, doing all this week, the turn up, the Royal Penrith Panthers, and the best team in the world all of a sudden.
Again,
the
best. Yes.
You know, it's wrong, but it's what you need is you need people to recognise that that's the world we're living in, and unfortunately, and certainly you want your owners to have a bit of sanity and to understand that.
They've got to be the level-headed ones, aren't they? You know, we're fans, we're emotional, we can see that week to week. Sometimes we'll go to a game, we'll think, oh wow, that was absolutely brilliant, we're going to Old Trafford, and then we lose a game, we're thinking, oh, we're absolutely crap, we're going to finish 10th. The emotions in a fan, especially, you know, when we go every week, home and away, no matter where it is, we'll be there, and It can get the better of you at times, and I'm still guilty of it now, even at 30 years old. But I see some blokes who are pushing 50 and are still guilty of it. I mean, my dad's the same, and he's what, 90, 100? You know, you see it all the time. You see it all the time, don't you? The emotions do get the better of you sometimes. But obviously, you know, you don't. That's where you need your level-headedness at boardroom level. That's why you don't get a fan. You know, you don't get a super fan who's. And again, you see that over the river. I mean, how many decisions has he made where he's probably made the wrong decision because the fans in him? You know, whereas we've got someone in Brett Hodgson who will make the right calls, I think, for the club. It's just about, you know, you obviously your James Clark's above him and your Adam Pearson's above that, listening to him and backing him.
It's an interesting scenario over the river there, though, isn't it? You know, with the Tony Smith stuff. And again, you talk about the social media era. It was after the derby, Tony Smith was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Now, all of a sudden, a few weeks later, the amount of vitriol against him, you know, and the amount of people calling for them to get rid of him early was unbelievable after one semi-final defeat. You know,
if I can throw a little bit of a history lesson in here, right? I'm old enough to remember when Brian Smith took over Hull. Now, Hull at that time were an absolute basket case. We'd had Len Casey in charge. The last half of that season, we'd had basically caretaker managers looking after us until, you know, we had people looking after us until we could find someone full time. And then when Brian Smith came in, we lost the first four games of that season. And we looked awful. And he brought in Craig Coleman, who looked terrible. He brought in David Boyle, who looked awful. He brought in, you know, Neil Henry was playing for us in the centres. David Moon, he brought in. They were the four Aussies he brought with him. And we all went, oh, Jesus, what is this? You know? And Dan O'Hara came out in the press and he said, just you wait. We haven't won these four games, but we've been fairly close. But he said, just you wait. There's something brewing here. There's something you can feel. There's something that's completely different about this team. And more or less with the same players that had, you know, escaped relegation by the skin of our teeth the year before, he went on a run and we ended up finishing fourth that year. Now, the reason that that happened was because he had to change things quickly. Because there was the way that we were playing like a bottom three side. Like the entire, for two seasons before that, we were playing like a bottom three side. And he had to get a different mentality and he had to get a different direction with more or less the same playing group, with only the addition of four Aussies that were, you know, all right, and one of whom we only had until Christmas in Craig Coleman. We only had him for the first, you know, 3-4 months of the season. He only played half a season for us. So he had to change things quickly, and it didn't work at first. And after those first four matches, there was a real rumbling around Hull supporters. Our, you know, people weren't going to matches. Our attendance was really starting to fall. And all of a sudden, you could just see the players had that self-belief and that, because that's exactly what Brian Smith was, as you said, John, is that even keel. Didn't get massively excited when we won, didn't rant and rave when we lost. He was just straight all the way through it. And he was talking about trusting in process, trusting the systems. Trust me, we'll get there. Trust me, we're a better team than this. You know, and he talked about 1% improvements. 2% improvements, 5% improvements, and we improved week on week on week. And he changed that club mentality from a club that was happy to escape relegation year in, year out, to a club that by the time he left was sat on the top of the league 2 years later, 2.5 years later. He signed some journeymen. He didn't sign any real superstars particularly. He spotted Greg Mackey when Greg Mackey was on a short-term deal at Warrington and stole him from Warrington because that was the halfback he wanted to build his team around. And apart from that, he just built and built and built slowly and steadily. And there's a lot of parallels there to what Hodgson's doing with us right now. You know, he's just improving us bit by bit and he's turning the Titanic. You can't just stop the bus and turn it around when we've played a certain way for years and years and years. And you've got players that are 10 years at the club that are used to us playing a certain way. If you suddenly say to a Danny Houghton or to a Scott Taylor or to a Shaw or to a Connor even, stop playing that way, play my way, the wheels are going to fall off. We need to do it by degrees. And I think we're starting to see now the difference in what the Brett Hodgson coached Hull side will look like for the next couple of years. And we're starting to see that there is a reliance on on graft and a reliance on defence, but there's also speed and guile, and there's a real, it's not the best way to put it, but there's the difference between last Radford and Hodgson.
Well, balance, just, aren't we, I think, right?
So yeah, that's balance. That's
the best
right.
way to put it.
Yeah, it's just better, you know? And yeah, we haven't got instant success, but name me a coach that's gone into a club and got instant success. None.
We're a fusion of different approaches. You can see that at times. And that's what all the best teams are. They can roll the sleeves up when they need to, and they can throw the ball about when they need to as well. You've got to build that approach to it, and we're steadily getting there. We're not the best team in the league. We're far from it at this stage. We're probably right now where we should be. I think if you look at it, if everybody's fit and everybody's there, we're probably the fourth best team in the league. I think that's a fair statement. There'll be those that say, "Oh, you're nowhere near fourth," but for me, that's where we are. With a bit of luck going our way, and if we approach the end of the season in the right way, we have a real opportunity to do something in the same way that the others do. People have been banging on about St. Helens since the start of the year, saying how amazing they are, and yes, they've been very good, but nothing is won in April. You know, you've got to build to the right end of the season, and I think we are doing that. That being said, it could be derailed really, really quickly if we get some key decisions.
And could be derailed in the next 2 weeks when we've got St. Helens and then Wigan. Yeah.
Although, I think we're quite fortunate to be catching them when we are. I saw over the weekend people were saying, "Oh, well, you're going to get a reaction from St. Helens. They're going to want to come and do it." Well, I think the amount of emotional effort that they'll put into that semi-final and where they're at physically after Easter, it's absolutely the right time to catch them. Providing we can hold them early doors, I think we should come away with a... I'm really confident we'll come away with a victory if we're prepared to get into an arm wrestle and grind and really test them and put the pressure on them. If we come out thinking we're going to throw the ball about, then we've got no chance. But I'm confident that I'm going to St. Helens on Friday, actually confident that we can go there and get a victory. Wigan winning in the semi-final, they're not... We then play them the week before the Challenge Cup final. So this has fallen pretty well for us.
Real they could very easily rest a load of players. Yeah.
On the contrary, they could play the strongest side. On the contrary, couldn't they? But it'll definitely give us a measure, you know, more of a measure to where Hull FC are at. But we've definitely got to build on what we've done over the past three games, and that is on a solid go forward. You know, a solid ruck, a solid defence, a solid kicking game. If we can stick to those systems, stick to those processes, we're going to be within a shout. You know, like to think that at least we won't get rolled over and, you know, succumb to a heavy defeat. It'd be nice, whatever happens, it'd just be nice to compete with St. Helens on Friday. And if we can do that, and if you say if we can stay in that grind, then why not? You know, why not?
That's what I'm looking for, Dan, on Friday, is us to try and tough it out, not to try and take shortcuts and trick players and things like that, for us to play properly and back ourselves and have an element of confidence that we're good enough to go up against them and go toe-to-toe. That's what I'm looking for.
And we've got something to prove as well, because the last time we played, and we didn't give a true account of ourselves, you know, because of the sending off, because of the fact that it was a bloody blizzard, and the fact that it was just after Johnny Whiteley had passed as well. There was a lot going on that day, and we didn't cope with it. So we've got a real, we've got a bit of a bee. We should have a bee in our bonnet about this one. You know, we should be wanting to right some wrongs.
Yeah, absolutely. We should be going there. You know, with the point to prove, we'll go there, like you say. It's live on Sky as well. It's the rest of the competition we'll be watching. Let's go down and put a marker on and show that Hull FC mean business, and they're not going to fade away, and they're not going to, you know, be that team that pop up for a few weeks and then wither, you know, wither away and die. I just hope that second half of the season we can kick on. That's something obviously we didn't do last year, but yeah, if we can do it this year, then it just definitely shows that, you know, what we've been talking about is obviously be justified there. Just quickly mention a few things that have happened over in Australia. I know you've already mentioned Penrith, but I think the big news this weekend is a lad called Jack Harrison scoring.
Yes, mate. Yeah, my son's first ever game of competitive rugby league. For Port Macquarie Sharks under 12s. He was sat on the bench for most of the first half, came on last 5-10 minutes of the first half, didn't touch the ball, didn't make a tackle. Second half, went back on the bench, came back on with 5 minutes to go, didn't touch the ball, didn't make a tackle, and then right at the end, two massive crunching tackles, and just as the Hooter went, they passed him the ball, he sidestepped to and put the ball down under the sticks. And it was 22 all at the time, so he's got the match-winning try with his only touch of the ball. So, just like his old man, it's all about not overextending yourself and just doing enough. That's been my motto for all of my life, mate. So, I was very, very pleased, very proud of him. And the fact that he's called Jack Harrison and he's scoring tries for fun, there we go. He's written in the stars, isn't he? And he's off quota because I've still got my English passport. So, there you go. When we come knocking in 6 or 7 years' time, that's all good.
Fantastic. Yeah, that'll be pretty much the end of when McIntosh is ready to hang his boots up on it. I think he's about 25 pounds. That'll be about right timing. But yeah, good stuff, gents. Thanks a lot for your time as always. And yeah, hopefully we'll meet St Helens on Friday. We'll meet Wigan the week after. We can give a proper account of ourselves. And yeah, come on, you all.
Absolutely.
100%.